Hello, good people. You're listening to the Black Doula Podcast with myself, Xavier Wade, aka the Black Doula. Today's episode features Rashida Kambe Miller, and we're going to be discussing oppression and the body. So, Rashida, I'm super excited to have you.
Excited to be here.
We just had like a whole pre-podcast before the podcast recording. We didn't get into our feelings. We warmed up the conversation. But so we're going to do the damn thing. We're going to give them, you know, our warmed up goodness. But if you don't mind, could you introduce yourself and tell us about all the magic that you have going on?
Oh my gosh. First of all, thank you just for even having me. I'm smiling. First of all, Xavier had me in tears. I've been weeping for the past 20 minutes. So, you know, there's that. But all like good cleansing. You know, if y'all know Xavier and you know how she can just like see through all of the things that you're trying to like throw up your little dark stuff. She's like, oh, yeah, no, this, take that, move that. The real thing right there. That, let's talk about that. And so she just did that to me.
To get you ready.
I'm open. So thank you. My name is Rashida Kambe Miller. My pronouns are she, her, and temptress. I really love to be called temptress. I don't know why I keep saying that. I feel like I say that in all my videos now. I really love to be called temptress.
Temptress is a whole vibe though. You gotta let me know to get used to it.
You know, and so it just, when people do greet me as temptress, I'm like, something in my spine shifts. Like, when I wonder if Beyonce feels like that, you know what I mean? Like, when like people like really go there with her and they're like, Beyonce! And like, she gets that like adjustment in her spine. That's like, yes.
So I'm gonna call temptress for the rest of the show. There we go.
Sammy, I don't know if I can handle you calling me. You might need to just call me Rashida.
Yeah, Rashida, we'll practice it another time.
You know, that's a whole vibe. Oh my God. So thank you all. Thank you so much for having me. I'm the founder of the Messy Movement Lab, which is an online space that is dedicated to helping visionaries rest, is dedicated to giving us a space, whatever your vision is, whether that's the vision that you have for your family, the vision that you have for your business, for your community, like people who are always in the position of caring for or gathering, you know, the energy and the care of others, protecting others, looking out for others, you know, whether that's in your work or at home, and tending to those people. Giving us a space to be able to slow down, to reconnect back to something more than just the day-to-day stuff, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And allowing us an opportunity to remember that pleasure is our fuel and not a reward that we have to work ourselves toward.
You said that pleasure is our fuel. We even said, girl.
Yeah. So, you know, we work with folks in, you know, since the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, we've been building an online space because I was on tour. I was doing a cross-country tour for 3 years where, I never wanted to host classes in like, you know, you just show up weekly, even though I did do that for other studios. But like when I was thinking about shaping my business for myself, I really loved the idea of intensives and getting a chance to be in city with people and, you know, for a short amount of time. And so like, I really tried to put that structure in practice for those first couple of years, but in that same time, building this online space that would allow people the opportunity to do the integration work, because I'm sure that people can resonate with going to conferences, going to events or retreats, and you have a really beautiful and transformative experience while you're in the space. And then that paradigm shift, like the bridge that we're on after we leave these really big, expansive experiences, if we don't have those people around us in that time of walking that bridge from one paradigm to the next, what happens is we either just go back to the old paradigm and all of the old ways set in, and our body just, it's already so close from a muscle memory perspective to the old behaviors, the old beliefs, the old feelings, the old memories, everything. And so it's just easier and more comfortable for the body to be there, right? As opposed to this expansion experience that really feels a bit like tumultuous, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And if you don't have other people around you who look just a mess, just as much as you are in the process of becoming or, you know, calling forward this thing in your life. Like it just, it's hard. It's hard to keep walking. People can, you know what I mean? I'm sure we've all had those experiences where we still blunder through anyway, but when you get to the other side, you're pretty tattered, you know what I mean? And your spirit is pretty tattered. And so you make the big leap in the transition, but then you're down for 6 months, you know? And so what we really want to do with folks coming into the Messy Movement Lab and developing a sensual self-care practice, not just for their life, but also for the way in which they embody their style of leadership, is that you don't have to wait until, you don't have to just keep running the car without any fuel or with low fuel and still trying to serve, still trying to give, still trying to show up, still trying to do all of the things that, you know what I'm saying? Like you, that make your business function or make your life function, and just accepting that as just like, this is the way things have to be. But we, if these people are visionaries, we know that the ripple effect, the impact of them being cared for doesn't just ever stop with them, right? Mm-hmm. It's not some luxury of like, oh, I'm going to have a spa day, and at the end of the spa day, like, I feel good, you know, fuck everybody else. It's like, no, if this femme goes and takes care of herself for 8 hours, you know, this time, that ripple effect of her having 8 hours by herself, or 8 hours to process, or 8 hours to cry, or 8 hours to move, or 8 hours for someone else to tend to her needs for the day, it's going to give her 180 hours to be able to give to other people.
That's a fact.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who is the person? Who are the people? Who are the teams that are actually pouring into those people, that are making that type of communal, familial, and global impact, right? Like, these are people who are need time to go and hibernate and think and strategize and envision new worlds. And if they don't have that level of care because they're so stretched thin, we're going to miss out on things, you know what I mean? Because they're not able to show up and do that, their thing effectively.
Theme preaching. You preaching. It's like resonating with me so heavily too, because we've known each other for a year now. And when we first met was when I was in the process of doing a lifetime of quarantine, I guess, for that space. And at that time, it was so much going on. I mean, like, COVID was like really, really new. We still were like, what the hell is this? We were on lockdown, probably. You know, I was like, you know, mourning the death of my grandfathers, my uncle, my friend dying from COVID. It was just like a lot going on. But from that time, just like reflecting on when I first met you to now, like, I'm different. And like, I can really say that like your work has influenced me to like put up boundaries, to like create more space for myself. If I create the space for myself, it'll only be like a positive ripple effect for my business, for my life, for whatever I'm trying to, you know, whatever's in my stratosphere. And like, that's, I told you, that's part of the reason why, like, I brought you here. So when I'm talking about oppression, right? And my identities are, I mean, there's many of them, but, you know, Black, woman, non-binary, queer, I'm dark skinned, you know, that's the whole thing, amongst other things. And I feel like right now, you know, especially in the last year, which is really funny because I've been on this journey with you for the last year. After the death of George Floyd, like Breonna Taylor, like all these things, it just felt like, fuck, this shit is so heavy. Like, it's so heavy. And it was like, you know, already having the prior knowledge that, you know, I'm in a marginalized community and that there's ways that my identities have been oppressed. There's ways that I've been oppressed as an individual. But it was like seeing your work, do I have to align with that oppression or can I do something different? That's what I took away from your work and like you being a part of like my world and me becoming a part of yours. It was like, oh, like I can have this, like this oppression does exist, right? Like I can't deny that. And it does live in my body, right? Like I can feel it. I can feel it when my shoulders are heavy. I can feel it when my back is tight. I can feel, you know, the anxiety and like all those different things. But when I tap into you, when I saw your work through Instagram and all that, but then me and you started having conversations, I was like, damn, like Rashida's just choosing to be liberated. Like she's choosing to move. She's choosing to not like have these heavy feelings take over her life or her body or her existence. Like she's choosing to be radical about her experience on this earth. Like she doesn't really give a fuck about what's going on. She cares, you know what I'm saying? But like, it doesn't impede on like the pleasure that you have in your life and like the pleasure that you find, right? And like how you bring that into the world. So I guess my first question is, how does like your personal experience intersect with the work that you've created and like with the messy move? Like, how did that all come to be? Give me the deets. Because I feel like through your work, I feel like it's really just an expression of you. You just had the ability to be like, you know what? I'm going to take this practice and multiply it. So I'm just like wondering how that all came to be.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you. I think that there is just something so, the people around me that have, that I've been inspired by watching you all show up and be in your messages and just like, you know, I feel like y'all have the language, you have the, you know, like you don't, maybe that layer of sensitivity that I'm like, I'm so weepy about things sometimes, you know, but like, I just love like when I see y'all just like do your thing and I'm like, yes, that. And so to hear, like for you, for instance, you, for you today, and then like yesterday, JT Perry, who's another teacher that I really admire and also co-founder of the Mystic Soul Conference, which I got an opportunity to teach at. And was it last year or the year before that? Either one. She shared a thought that I had shared around like the election. And, you know, I oftentimes feel really, while I have so much experience like living in these intersections, oftentimes because I don't have like a degree in women's studies or, you know, race and history or whatever the case, mm-hmm. I oftentimes feel like maybe my voice isn't necessarily like the clearest, or, you know, maybe I don't have, you know, all of the terminology or whatever. And so in that, you know, as I grew up as a performer, but I grew up in very radical spaces as a performer. I grew up in Trinity United Church of Christ, which was headed by the Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright Jr., you know, and if y'all don't know who Pastor Wright is, you need to go figure it out. Go figure it out. I grew up under that teaching. I've always understood that I was supposed to show up in the world as unapologetically Black and unashamedly Christian. And that was really like our, like the thing that was just ingrained in me. And so while I don't necessarily identify with Christianity in the same ways that I did, you know, in my youth, that same energy around being unapologetic about my Blackness and unapologetic about the intersections of my identity, and that not being the thing that discounts me, it's like, you know, that's just kind of the energy I've just been taught to walk with, even if my voice is shaking and I'm scared and I don't really know what I'm, you know, like, I don't really know, whatever, you know, like, yes. You know, one of the things that I learned and understood growing up under Reverend Wright was that you can't be in the world doing spiritual work and not talking about the ways in which that spiritual work intersects with people's identities, because mm-hmm. then you're all, you know, if you're thinking yeah. about the example is always the sign of the cross. You know, if Jesus was only ever from, you know, had this part of the cross, then he's all, you know, of no earthly good, because there's no actual connection to the things that are happening, the physical, tangible reality around him. But the point was that it was an actual cross and that there were two thieves on either side of him. Therefore, that connected him to an earthly experience that we really try to take away from this story around God and what we understand about divinity. You know, it's not always this, like, you know, which in a lot of white colonized self-help mm-hmm. spiritual spaces becomes like spiritual bypassing, you know, because mm-hmm. we don't want to talk about racism. We don't want to talk. So it's all this. We don't want to talk about racism. We don't want to talk about fat phobia. We don't want to talk about, you know, like pleasure as like a necessity. We don't want to talk about sex ed. We don't want to talk about those things. Like, we just want to talk about like abundance and manifestation and, you know, being high vibe and, you know, all this bullshit. And it's like, right. But like, if I can't deal with the stuff that's on my peripheral, there's no way that I'm going to be able to pull that energy up through the center of my body, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so like, that's really like the energy that I was, you know, I just grew up under. And, you know, I think that as I, you know, started to come into my own understanding of like being queer, being, you know, well, and at the time didn't even have the language queer, let's be honest. I was a lesbian.
Damn.
That I was a lesbian and I like girls. And I understood that that also was not acceptable. I also understood that that made people look at me like I was a predator in all of the church spaces that I was in. If they even had a whiff of the idea that, you know, I was gay, like, I guess because I was gay, I was apparently trying to turn all the girls out.
Which, right, like, no.
The ingraining of this predatory language around queerness that people turn people out, you know, and that kind of following you, you know. I was taunted all through high school for my queerness. I was taunted all through my development as a queer person at church and, you know, in other spaces. And so I really, it was like, it became a point of survival to leave the church. It became a point of survival to start to disconnect from some of the communities, because even though, you know, like my relationship with my pastor was very different. And I, and even in the, like, I have old letters, like he used to write letters, and I think he might even still, like, him and his team, like, they might still try to do this, but he has a thing of like writing individual letters to members, like for their birthday, or, you know, if they were going through like a very specific hard challenge that year, like, you know, sending them like a thoughtful note. And I remember shortly after my mentor, Reverend Anthony Hollins, died, and he was a very well-known HIV/AIDS activist in Chicago and across the country. After he died, I had all of these questions about how he was able to show up like as a Black gay man in the 90s in a Black church on the South Side and stand in front of this entire congregation of pro-Black, like, South Side of Chicago people. I ain't gonna say what y'all heard, but I say,
I got you.
Hello, people. And said, I'm a Black gay man living with HIV and AIDS, and I contracted AIDS from having sex with a man. And I'm bringing you this conversation today so that we can start some preventative care, because some of y'all out here really tripping, thinking that this is a gay disease, and I'm trying to help y'all. So queer people, once again, being ostracized, completely removed from this idea of being holy, being divine, being necessary, being loved, and still being like a life-saving force to a community of people that, like, I mean, still to this day, weep at the sound of his name. And we are the most rejected, isolated, forgotten about, harmed people in these very spaces that we bring life into, from the ministries of dance and music to pastoral care to...
Preaching. You preaching. I'm like, you better say that. So, you know, burn some shit down. You better say that.
You know, between Anthony and Reverend Wright and all of my movement teachers, and then, like, as I started, like, finding my way post high school and, like, you know, trying to figure out, like, what my, you know, what my career as a performer was going to look like. I was going into a theater program at University of Illinois Chicago. And I was just, like, you know, trying to figure things out. Somehow ended up on a study abroad in Salvador de Bahia, Brazil, right before my sophomore year of college. And this would be my second trip to Brazil, because my mom actually took me to Brazil with Pastor Wright when I was about 12 or 13. And we went for 2 weeks. We went to Salvador de Bahia and we went to Rio and Sao Paulo. And we got a chance to do a cultural immersion and, like, understand, like, what our connection was through the Black diaspora to, you know, these spaces in Brazil, and just understanding, like, the transatlantic slave trade. Like, listen, y'all just have to go look up Reverend Wright's lectures. Like, you know, he's just a phenomenal she's a phenomenal teacher, you know? And so it was just such a blessing. I mean, at such a young age to be able to be in that space. And so I knew when I was doing my study abroad, I felt a really, you know, Brazil just kind of followed our family after that. My mom loved it. Her thing. You know, we never got a chance to go back together, but I was like, I think I'll go to Brazil. When I saw it on the list, I was like, this would be great. And so I ended up being there for like 3 months. It was the most healing and transformational period, I think, in my work, and definitely was the catalyst for where I am today. I had the experience in Brazil of being in my body, stacked as I am, plus size, dark skin, Black girl, and feeling, one, like there wasn't anything wrong with my body for the first time. I'd grown up in performing arts spaces, as I told y'all. And so like the conversation around my body was always that it was too big, too this, too whatever, too da 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 da, too lazy, too, you know, all the things. I persevered anyway. I was still fucking talented as hell. You know what I mean? They could never, and that was the hard part. Mm-hmm. The hard part. They was like, you can talk all, call me fat, call me ugly, call me not a good fit, say I'm not trained, say I'm lazy, whatever. But at the end of the day,
I'm still the shit. I still
gotta acknowledge that. And like just having that inner love dance. Dance is like, it's just a second skin. You know what I'm saying? And so no one could ever take that away from it. It's definitely, you know, pummeled. Confidence was pummeled as a child. Like, you know, from having dancers like, you're too fat to do ballet, you're too fat to do point, you're too this. And instead of being like, oh, you're a larger body person, so in order for you to execute this type of work, which we see that you have the ability and talent to do, you need to do this specific training. The gap between where the training was needed physically to be able to sustain that level of impact on the body, the teachers were just, you know, unfortunately ill-equipped, you know, to be able to prepare students in that way. They only knew how to train European bodies. And so unfortunately, when you base your training off of one particular set of folks, you're going to miss out on the opportunity to, you know, be a part of other people's legacy and journey.
When you said that, like, you're going to miss out on the opportunity. Like, this could have been a great opportunity for you. Like, not just me.
Teachers, mm-hmm. And I speak their names frequently. And I pray that, you know, as I teach that, you know, years down the line, when it's time for me to sit down and rest, that, you know, that I leave that type of impact on people. But that doesn't happen unless you have some level of compassion and grace about the way that you're calling people into these processes, right? And so, you know, seeing like all of those, like, you know, the way in which people were interacting around my fat body and to being very sexualized as a young girl by older men and by anybody, just anybody. It didn't matter. It was just like, you know, everybody was wrong. Just wrong, you know. I couldn't wear whatever because my body would attract whatever. You know, I couldn't do this because everybody was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I never had that opportunity to just be this voluptuous girl who's just like, you know, developing in her body and coming into her own and, you know, and just have a safe space to just like have that. And so when I got to Brazil and I'm wearing this yellow Brazilian bikini and I'm walking down the beach and all of a sudden I'm just like in my own world, I'm vibing, I'm jamming, and this man just bows at my feet. And he's not being disruptive or like, you know, catcalling me or anything like that, because, you know, I'm swift with the I'm Chicago, okay? I'm swift with it. But he just bowed at my feet, you know? He was just like, you're so beautiful. He just kept doing this motion with his hands. He was like, Baiana, Baiana, you know, Baiana is like the what you would call someone who is from Bahia. But the Baiana in the state figure, it's like, it's a woman with large hips and they wear the hoop skirts under the white so that the hips protrude out. And it just gives this like, you know, it's just like fertile and rich and, you know, abundant. And it was like really that moment forward. I was like, I never walked down a beach in Chicago in a bikini or even a bathing suit. Because it was always, oh, your stomach's not flat, or you're not small enough, or like, what if people, or your legs are, the inner parts of your thighs are too dark, or your legs jiggle, your arms jiggle. It's like always too much, too much, too much. And after that, it was like, all right. And I'm like, how do I integrate this experience, this embodiment of feeling that, you know, you wearing your yellow bikini down the beach in Brazil and just feeling like just yummy and open and delicious and rested and connected and enough? How do we get people there through dance? And from there, we just took off. I came back bugging the hell out of my university. They gave me all type of space. I don't know what they were thinking. They was giving me studio space and letting me host concerts. And I mean, I was just all over the place doing everything but the stuff I was supposed to be doing in school. But it didn't matter because I was clearly going to something, and people were like, you know, they were vibing with it. And so from there, I started teaching at classes around the city and then started developing my own practice, you know. And we just actually watched the first video, that the first promo video that we produced, one of the program, and it was released in 2012. And I just was like, wow, literally 9 years ago, we were talking about self-care systems. 9 years ago. You know, so I know that self-care is like, it's popping.
It's popping. Definitely popping. And I feel like, you know, like in your work, like just in the identities that we share, right? Like we are definitely aligned in some spaces. It's like thinking about self-care is just not number one priority. And it could be, you have to like mindfully, for me especially, mindfully go into self-care. Because it's like this idea that like self-care has to be deserved. It has to be after you do this big accomplishment. It has to be, you know, it's a reaction to something instead of just being what is needed. Like you said, the fuel, right? Like instead of seeing it as a place of like, it's not optional. This is what we have to do for sustainability, and not just for our own sustainability, but for our community sustainability. And so like when you're doing that work and in this like beautiful space that you've created, do you feel like the work that you do and that you spread across the world is really kind of like, isn't an act of resistance?
It is. And I think, you know, oftentimes we're like I was saying, you know, I felt like I had to embody my resistance in the same way that other people were able to orate and write and, you know, be able to articulate these things in very like with very heightened academic language. And I always felt like I was missing the thing. I was like, I didn't feel confident in my words in that way. I didn't feel like, so like, again, I was like, I have to get to the place where I just tap into the energy I know, because that's the thing that's called that I know it's the embodiment of the theory, right? It's like the theory is needed, but then we also need the integration. Like, how do I get these very radical ideas about pleasure and about feeling good and about rest? How do I actually integrate them into my life, into my day-to-day experience, not just when I'm at a conference or when I'm talking to a friend or whatever, but like literally into the fabric of my life? And so, you know, I guess in asking those questions, and I'm sure other teachers can resonate with this, you start asking questions and the universe is like, oh, okay. Let me run that lesson back for you real quick, you know? And then your life starts to become a playground for the very things that you're saying, like, okay, is this a thing? Like, is this something that I want to move into, you know, being able to guide people through and create that strategy? And so, you know, we lost everything. I said, I wanted to play a bigger game and we lost everything, everything. Lost $20,000 on a retreat that failed, you know, like had to cancel it because of a national disaster, lost a client base, lost our home, damn near lost our marriage. We'll rock you.
It's real. It's real.
Everything. Mm-hmm. And then was like, all right, how bad do you want it? And I was like, yep. I had to find a way to hold that energy and that experience that I said was important no matter what. So we had moved all the way to California, girl. We was in some a little corporate housing situation. They had set us up for like 3 months or something like that. So we had some time to do our little transition work. Cool. I'm in that little, you know, they got your little couch area. You got your bed. I had the dog at the time. Rocky was still with us. And like, he would be running all over the room. And I'm trying to get into my practice. I'm talking hallways, I'm talking closets, I'm talking about in the bathroom, in the shower, somewhere in the car, in a parking lot. I'm talking about wherever I could find 5 minutes to drop into my body to remind myself of the truth that I know, like not the, like, yes, the truth of the reality that we're living in, it does exist. It is not the only thing that exists. And that's the thing that we have to like work ourselves to remember. It's like, this is true. Yes, things are quite shitty right now. It's a pandemic. I'm doing arms right now for those of you all who can't see me. It's very shitty right now. A lot of shit is stressful, gestures wildly. Things are fucking chaotic. We are living through the middle of a pandemic. None of us in this particular, maybe our parents, maybe some of your grandparents have been through this, but we haven't. And so our minds, our bodies, our psyches, our DNA is going to change forever after this. Like, we are stepping into a whole nother version of life that we only saw in movies up until now. You know what I'm saying? This whole virtual life, the way things are about to be the next year, the innovations that are have already been underway that are now like, all right, it's go time. This is the stuff we've been watching for the last 10 years. It's here now. Right? So all of that is real. And you know what else is real? That we are not meant to struggle. That the vessel that provides the care is just as important as the care that is provided. That in that sacred time where we slow down, we don't lose anything, we gain everything. That we are enough, that we are loved, that we are whole, that we are needed as a people, individually, collectively, as communities, all of that. We are needed. Literally nothing that's happening in this physical, tangible reality can ever alter that. They're changeless facts, right? So the minute that we step, what we're using our pleasure practices for, what we're using the messy movement practice, is to allow our bodies to shift the perspective. Because you can't control your thought all the time. You might start the day off feeling great, and by the end of the day, life sucks, racism. You don't argued with 10 people online, you stressed out, your customers are, you know, hagging you. It's like, it can just spiral, right? So what do you do to get in front of that? Where do you check your energy? Where do you refuel? Where do you go and stop and get gas? There are many of us have been operating cars with no fuel. We on the highway going 80 miles an hour, and there's less than a fourth of a tank of gas in the car. And guess what? We about to pick up our friend who's about four blocks off the highway, and they're going in the opposite direction. We ain't stopping to get gas either, but we said, I got you, girl. I'm going to be there. Because I know you need this ride. And of course, I wouldn't want to have you inconvenienced out in the rain. Let me take care of you.
You preaching. You better go ahead now.
Make sure you good, though. You're going to be good. You're going to get to your doorstep. You're going to be dry. You're going to get there 5 minutes early because I speed. I'm going to make sure you're good. Now, who's going to get me to where I got to go after I done went out the way to make sure you got to your destination safely and on time and fed and lifted? Because, of course, you know, on the way, I'm definitely going to pour into your spirit because I've been thinking about you. Come on. Like,
you listen. Listen.
Want to take a gas. So what do we do? What do we do? You know, realistically, that if you do not put gas in your car, not only will the car stop, but you will also damage it. A car cannot run without fuel. Fuel, not reward. Not a car fuel. Can't run without reward. It's not an optional thing. Some of y'all may act like that, but it is not. And you know that, right? But we risk and we push and we push and we push and we push and we keep going and we keep going because we saw our mamas do it. We saw our grandmamas do it. You know, I hate it when people say you can't give from an empty cup. It's a fucking lie. Yes, you can. We saw all of the people in our lives do it. We saw them give to the point of exhaustion because there was no other choice. So it is a dismissal of the history of the femmes and the femme labor that has even catalyzed us to this point to keep regurgitating this colloquialism that you can't give from an empty cup.
You saying something. You saying something. That's a fact. Like, how many of us have given and continue to give when we have nothing?
When you tired, you depressed, your back is hurting.
Feeling like it's our job. Like, if we don't do it, it won't get done.
If we don't do it, it won't get done. Come on. So what we're understanding now is I can give from an empty cup. I don't want to. And it's okay. We don't have to make something a need in order to want it. We can give from an empty cup. I choose not to. Darren, not.
Like, and that's like, that's the point. Like, that's like that mindful resistance that, like, which is why I fuck with you so heavily, right? Because it's not like, it's like making a choice. And like, that's the work that I love about you, that you make a choice.
Making, and it's going to be hard. Don't, it's hard to live how things are now. It is also hard to live in a more expansive way, but you will also have whatever you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You will also be in a different space to take care of yourself. You will also have your needs met. And
exactly. But that's the reward. Right? Like, that's the reward. Like, if you put the energy and the fuel into yourself, those yes. are the actual rewards of, yes. like, having balance, feeling centered.
That's the fruit. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the fruit of the labor, of the healing that you've done for yourself, and the healing being constant. We got to stop thinking about healing being this thing that we go do on a weekend retreat, or that we go get that little one Reiki session and then it's over. No, your healers are meant to be a part of your everyday life. You should be talking to somebody every week. You should be hitting somebody, tapping into somebody, something every week, not just when they got a little special course. These people keep y'all sustained.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They feed you. Imagine if the healers that you go to just stop teaching. Just stop. No explanation, no nothing, no don't knock this digital course here. Shit would fall.
Shit would definitely fall.
That's not the way that we act. We don't value and prioritize our healers, our coaches, our therapists, our doctors in those ways. We don't do that because we're taught to not prioritize our care. But then we're like, oh, when I go get that Reiki session, I seem to be feeling a lot better. Like, I logically understand that I am well after I go get a massage, go get some sleep, go take a bath, go to get this, you know, Reiki session, go to my therapy, book a doubles therapy session, go to a coaching session. Like, I realistically know after every session, I feel lighter, I feel better, I'm more optimized, I'm more energized. But yet, if we are not conscious of, like I was talking about earlier, that paradigm shift, right? Like, when you don't have the people around you that are saying yes, yes to that, yes to choosing that, yes, yes, put that down.
Mm-hmm.
Put that down too. Hire that person. Hire all of them people. Figure it out. You need all of that. Go get that. When you don't have that, and you don't have the other people reflecting, yeah, I'm putting that stuff down too. Oh yeah, I'm reaching for something new too. Oh yeah, you know what, girl? I booked a double life coaching session and a double Reiki session because I'm about to prepare for something big. So I know I need that support. I'm not even going to try to wear myself out worrying about it all week long and then trying to go into the thing. I'm just going to go get the support that I actually need. Somebody was like, oh, I need to book a divination.
Oh, wait, I didn't get exactly. But I think, like, what you're saying, though, is just, like, it helps me to understand, like, why you came into my life at the time that you did. Because that, for sure, is, like, one of the things that I've struggled with, right? It's, like, I'm definitely, I'm a doula by trade. I am Black, you know, I'm a woman. I've come from a family of strong ass Black women who have always given, even when they probably shouldn't have been. And like, for me, like a lot of things I talk about, or something I talk about on my Instagram, is Black luxury. And like, when people hear that, they're like, oh, like, you're talking about expensive gifts. And then I'm like, no, I'm talking about me saying no to shit. I'm talking about me making a choice of where I want to put my. Like, I'm talking about, like, I have boundaries. I choose the way that I move. I choose the way that I'm going to exist. And also, I don't hold responsibility for other people's failures, for their setbacks, for their negative feelings. I'm not the place that you come and just hand that to. Sorry.
Listen, I'm not doing unsolicited emotional labor for nobody.
Nobody. like nobody, because I'm not willing to carry that in my body.
And you know what? But that's what we've been conditioned to, mm-hmm. like, shapeshift meet, you know, do the wiggle thing and, like, mm-hmm. oh, how do you need me to show up in this space? Like, what do you need from me? Like, what level of nurturing do you need? And I really struggle with, like, you know, even just some of, like, going off on a tangent, this just came to my mind, like, even the around, like, you know, the ways in which, you know, women and femmes are conditioned to be nurturing. And I don't necessarily find myself to be that nurturing. Like I can be nurturing in terms of like my, you know, like my friendships, my marriage, you know, like at home, like I can be, but it is not my default. You know what I'm saying? It's not my default of energy. And for a long time, I felt really shitty about that. Like, I don't have that mama thing. I don't have that, like, yeah, that feminine air. But like, when I look at women who do have it, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm just like, I love you. You're amazing. Like, how do you do this? And I just appreciate it so much. And I feel like, you know, I for a long time, I felt like, oh, I don't have that nurturing. I need to develop it. I need to get it. I need to be that. I need to put this down. I need to be more serious. I need to be less expressive and all of this. And, you know, to like, you know, fit whatever definitions I thought a good wife looked like and what a good partner looked like, a good future mama was done. I was like, and I felt like ancestor me was like,
this just came to mind too. Like, one of the things that, like, you know, and we're going to end soon because I know we can sit here and talk forever, but one of the things that I, like, recently had a conversation about with, like, a couple of my friends, because it was, like, something that was happening, was, like, this, like, we always want to have an attitude of gratitude, right? Like, we always want to be thankful for the things that we have and, you know, what our world is and, you know, the blessings that are present for us, as well as, like, there is this, like, mix of like, if you're, you know, a woman, a Black woman, like someone who's expected to be the caregiver, the boss, the leader, can't cry, can't whatever, right? It's like also like mixed into this level of gratitude. So it's like we have to accept what we have in front of us, and then that's just the end of it. And I'm like, we have to also kind of like be aware of, I guess I'm afraid to like this for now, like toxic gratitude, where like we get so like into the space of like, oh, I have this, I'm not gonna complain, I'm not gonna whatever, where we miss the pleasure, right? We don't even like ask for it, we don't even demand it, we don't even think we deserve it, because we're in this like toxic gratitude, which limits us from moving from a pleasure-centered space, right? Yes. And knowing that like we deserve it, it's our right, it's our fuel. We don't have to have like some big celebration of like, oh, you got a new job or you got this or that, or like, no, like it's our birthright to be in that space. And like, it's really important. And it's something that I've, you know, learned to practice of like, yes, I am definitely, I'm, you know, happy with all the things that I have, like always, but that doesn't mean that I can't want more. It doesn't mean that I can't ask for more. It doesn't mean that like, I have to settle at this space, right? Like, and where, and when I think about that, I'm like, where does that idea even come from? And like, of course it starts, you know, connecting to these like systems of white supremacy and capitalism and different forms of oppression and like all of that. And it's like, I have to move from a place of pleasure, right? And not toxic gratitude, and like get what I need, so that when I'm talking about the growth of my community, when I'm talking about the growth of Black luxury for all of us, when I'm talking about collective liberation, I'm coming from a space that is centered and well and full and fueled and like all of that.
Who can you serve with your guilt?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And actually, better question, what are you serving people when you lead with your guilt? Because you can serve from your place, from a place of guilt, but what does it feel like to show up in that way? Mm-hmm. Guilty about what you're charging, guilty about the ways you want to rest, guilty about what you want to do in the world, guilty, 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 like feeling like you owe people a constant explanation for every single move, for every single decision, for every single no, for every single boundary that you have to prove that you should have something you want. Like, we've just been taught to like shapeshift and shrink. And I think the ways in which, like I said, like, you know, I started asking these big questions, and my life turned into that playground. And while it definitely didn't feel like a playground at the time, I understood. I just kept sitting in the vision of where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, I kept saying like, yo, like that's the place, that's the place, that's the place. Telling you, writing it literally down verbatim, where we want to live, how we want to structure things, and still walking into some pieces of that vision. But what would I have done had I let the reality of the fact that my spouse had been harmed by their workplace misgendered and mistreated and, you know, dealt with in just a disrespectful manner. And we had to make a decision to leave that space. There was no choice of like, oh, keep putting up with this level of harm so we can get that check. The divine energy that I understand says that these jobs, these systems, these corporations, these clients, whoever, they are not the source. And if I allow myself to become dependent on those things as the source, I'm always going to be beholden to making choices from a place of guilt. I'm always going to be beholden to making choices from how much I can shrink and contort myself into what is needed of me in that space, as opposed to how does this space serve me, right? In the full picture of my life that exists just me, right? Like we couldn't stay there. We couldn't stay in that space and that energy. I couldn't stay in a space where I was feeling extremely guilty that I had this huge loss in my business as a young entrepreneur. I had no idea what I was going to do. I was wrecked. The thing that I told myself was $20,000 will never hang over my head for 3 years ever again in life. Mm-hmm. $20,000 is a one-day problem now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The decision has to be made, or whatever the thing is, it's got to be a one-day problem, but it will never, never, ever, ever, ever pull me so deep into a space of doubt about the work that I'm doing, because I feel like I don't have the structures to be able to tackle that issue and rest. Because what it felt like at the time was this problem that I need to tackle is going to take everything out of me. And then for a long time, it did. For a long time, it did. The way in which I set it up, the way in which I tried, it did. And it was always in service of everybody else's needs. Everybody else is like trying to get ahead of whatever thoughts people would have about me, or whatever failure I thought I would be, or whatever, trying to get ahead of all of that shit. It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever should, like those things can be the reality. The debt can be the reality. The disruption can be the reality. The loss can be the reality, but there is always something more. The something more never stops to exist just because of what the current reality is. If I didn't fully believe that, I really couldn't say that to y'all. And I probably couldn't have said that to y'all 2 years ago. And I couldn't have said that to y'all 2 years ago, but I understand, having gone through such crippling loss, like emotionally crippling, and maybe that's not good language. Let me pause. Let me go back. Such devastating emotional space to be in, and the weight of that energy, you still have to fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's no fuel from day to day to restore where the gaps are, the leaks are, where you're excessively using a lot of fuel. Like in those situations, I was excessively using a lot of fuel, worrying about this situation, worrying about our home life, I was leaking energy, right? So if I'm leaking energy and it's like, all right, I'm just in a space where I'm worrying about everything, I'm anxious, I'm tired, I'm stressed out, what do you need to do? If you know that that's the space that you're in, don't be like, oh, I'm just not going to feel that stuff. I'm just going to write this email, you know, get on this coaching call, you know, do my IG live. I got this. You know what I mean? You are still a cold ass bitch if you go cry in the corner for an hour or two and get yourself together.
Mm-hmm.
And give yourself just a space to feel the stuff, right? But choosing that is pleasure. Giving the body an opportunity to actually decompress and to release, like that brings a sensation of goodness into the body, of being held, of release, as opposed to this constriction. The choosing of the energy, of the fueling stations for yourself, whatever that may be, whether that's your Reiki sessions or your life coaching or your therapy or, you know, spa days or home care or whatever, getting a chef, getting a driver, having someone come do your laundry, having someone do your lawn care, hiring new staff members, wherever those things are that you can add more people to your support, your care and logistics team.
Yes.
For your life. the more you'll be able, like, you're going to feel that shift in the way you're able to show up in whatever the vision is that you're stepping into.
Listen, listen. Okay, let's take a deep breath, because you just you just put it on, you just put it on us on like a whole different level. like some people, well, I don't know if we'll ever put the video, but I'm just like shaking my head because I'm like, yes, yes, like all of that. Cause it was like, you know, so many parallels and what you're saying, and like the people that are gonna be listening to this, and like even just the simplicity, like, I, you know, one of the things that I got this year, like a couple months ago, was like a cleaning service to come and clean my house, right? And I'm like, damn, that probably, you know, like maybe it's a little extra, maybe people gotta like judge me for that or whatever the case is.
I loved him, okay? Our house, Tim Dogs.
But I'm like, yo, that literally fuels me to know that like, there's someone I can depend on that's going to do this for me so that I have the time to use elsewhere and like put it into myself. Yeah. like, it's those simple things.
I don't have to do anything productive.
Exactly.
I can just like life, take my time and do my makeup, read a book. I remember the first time we got a house cleaner, it was a Black girl who came, and we was like, oh no, like this is horrible. You know, like we shouldn't be doing this. This is really bad. Mind you, she consented to this experience. She's getting paid. She can pay well too. You know, she came and she was like, hey y'all, how you doing? We was like, what's up? You know, like, well, we got, like, this is when we were back in Chicago. We were like, oh, we got this space and we got this space. She was like, okay, so where do you want me to start? And we was like, maybe you can start with like hanging up the clothes, maybe. Like, are you sure? You know, like, we like, you know, apologizing, thank you so much, really appreciate you. Thank you. And we were like, what do you need help with? She was like, what? And I was like, well, what do you need? What do you want us to do? She's like, why don't y'all go sit down like the white people do? And I was like, oh, baby, let's go sit down like the white people do. Why do I think that I need to go hire help, pay for help, tip, and also still work alongside you to do the very thing that I hired you for?
Mm-hmm. But like those moments, and like we're going to end soon, but it really brings me back to the space of like, you know, oppression in the body and liberation and all that. Like those moments of being like, I can sit down and do Ooh. What I can do for myself. I can Ooh. Sit down and not be productive. I can look on Google for a service that can do these things that, yes, I could do, but I'm making a choice not to do it. Like when we're doing those things that are like, you know, with the priority being ourselves and our wellness and our health and our pleasure and our joy, like that to me speaks to liberation. Like that to me moves us into this space of liberation. And like we're talking about that, you know, that ripple effect of liberation and the ripple effect of pleasure work and a ripple effect of all of that, like it goes into the movement of collective liberation. Yes. If I have more time for me, right, if I have more time to fuel myself, I am going to have the patience, the space,
the strategy, the ideas that come when people rest.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I crossed 100K year in my business when I took a sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, y'all, my mama done had a stroke and a heart attack this year. I done taught almost 18 hours a week in classes. You know, I've tried to deliver at this very high level all year, and I have excelled. And you know what? If I don't stop now, before I'm at that point of total burnout, I might not be teaching next year at all. It's time to stop.
And I remember when we first started talking, you were like, oh, I want to make this happen. I'm like, you can. Like,
and the mommy
can.
Rest,
like,
and
what do you mean? Doing the work that you're doing the rest, doing the pleasure. Like, and that to me, especially, is liberation and in a sense of like capitalism tells us that we have to work to get this money. Right. And like, you know, I work a lot. We know that I work a lot. You know, I mean,
work a lot. Enjoy being able to work.
But I want to work at my pace, at my schedule, when I want to, how I want to. I want to wake up, go to sleep, see money in my account from the work that I did a year ago. You know, like I'm trying, that's like the liberation I'm talking about. I'm talking about business, you know? And like, I just can't even thank you enough for this conversation.
Thank you.
I know from this conversation is going to be a lot of continued conversation for people that listen to this. And also just like, I'm hoping that people can really understand just from you and your example, when we are in bodies that are marginalized and oppressed, we have a choice. We still have a choice. That reality, there is that reality. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't change. Sometimes it gets worse. But like you said, there's always something more. And I think
always
the big process of like moving through oppression, finding liberation, and like going to the next level is like there's always something more that like we can tap in, and it's always there.
Always there. That vortex is always calling us. It's always calling us. And everything, the contrast, the last thing I'll say, is the experiences that we have in the physical, tangible reality. And if y'all are into Abraham Hicks, if you don't know, like go look it up. You'll see some of what I'm talking about. The contrast to the vision that we have of our lives or for the future, and to this experience, is just creating and firming up that vision even more. As something I always tell like the people in my life when shit is going on, it's this or something better. That's it. That's the rule. It can never be anything worse than this unless you choose something worse than this. But it is this or something better.
Listen, I just love you. That's it. That's it. Like, this is like perfect. I can't ask for more. And I'm going to be thinking about these nuggets throughout my day. Can you tell our good community of folks how to reach you, how to find you?
You all can find me online on Instagram at the Messy Movement Lab or at Rashida Convey Miller. And the websites for both are the same. So if you go to my website, you'll get a chance to like go through all like my artsy stuff and you know, the film and the book and, you know, the modeling and all that stuff. I do all like the creative, playful things. And then where I coach and where I like put my foot down is in the Messy Movement Lab. that's the place where you can get Coach Rashi, you know, to come and reorganize some things for you. So both of those websites are the same as the Instagram handle. Thank you so much for having me today, Sabi. I'm just like, again, still cheesy. Very honored. Incredible work and gathering people in ways that I really love the way you just bring people in without apology. You don't have any type of vibe about being able to shine next to somebody else. Like there's just, I just like, it's just such a breath of fresh air. I'm just very grateful for you.
Thank you. So we're going to say bye to our community.
Bye.
Rashida, because she's the shit, and maybe you'll be on again soon, because obviously we have this over and over again. Bye, y'all.
Yes.